Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode 175 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, another exciting week. How's things going on your end?
Things are great over here, man. Definitely plenty to talk about this week.
Yeah, no, some exciting news. Let's start with the SEC. I know we don't usually start with the SEC, but now that Paul Atkins is there, there seems to be a lot of really pro-crypto stuff coming out of there. They just had their fifth crypto roundtable. This one was called DeFi in the American Spirit. Hester Pierce has been, I think, moderating these crypto roundtables, and there were some really intriguing things that came out of it. Paul talked about how staking was not a securities transaction, which is kind of a big deal for all the proof of stake coins out there, Ethereum, Solana, and almost everybody else outside of Bitcoin. So that is exciting. They also talked about he wants to see more self-custody, which is kind of the opposite of what Elizabeth Warren and the Biden administration had talked about. They wanted to be the ones that controlled everything and not let you actually have your own money in your control. And then they talked about how they didn't want engineers to feel like they were going to be held liable for writing code. And we've seen some of this with Tornado Cash, where they are trying to go after people for being money transmitters, even though they just literally wrote code, which is kind of equivalent of having free speech. He did talk about how all of this, while it's current guidance from the SEC, it doesn't really mean anything until it can be turned into a law. So they need to kind of work towards turning this into a law. Now, of course, the other SEC Commissioner Caroline Crenshaw kind of said there's been so much for them to look at and they want to do it right instead of fast. So, which worries me that this might not happen before the midterms, and then we're probably in trouble there. But I'm hoping that somebody will kind of step up and put something into writing that makes this law and kind of protects the entire industry moving forward.
Yeah, that's in line with what Hester Pierce said at the Bitcoin conference. She had a little one-on-one chat and basically said the government isn't the babysitter, and you know, they should really back off. And if a person wants to go purchase any meme coin that they want and they think they're going to get rich the next day, go for it, but don't cry to the government when it goes bust. And it was funny because they even said, like, yeah, we're in Las Vegas, we can't, you know, the SEC won't let us, you know, operate or purchase these things, and they stand in our way, but I can drop $10,000 into a slot machine and pull the lever and see what happens. So, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a double-edged sword, and you know, so a little bit of hypocrisy in, like, where the government steps in and doesn't allow you to do things. So she's more freedom oriented, and to me it makes sense. There's no reason to prevent people from doing things just because they might lose money. I mean, that we don't really do that in America very much. So I think once they get this stuff straightened out, I think it'll be good for the companies that are trying to get things done, and it'll be good for the retail investor that wants to gamble a little bit on crappy altcoins and have a little fun. And I mean, honestly, all the way down to the institutions that want to have a little more confidence that they're not going to have regulatory problems with Bitcoin.
Yeah. And what we also kind of saw was at the Clarity Act, we've been talking a little bit about that, and there's been an amendment put on it. I think they are calling it the Amendment in the Nature of a Substitute, that added a key provision that clause specified that non-controlling developers, which means those encompassing who write or publish code, provide non-custodial wallets, or maintain blockchain infrastructure, shall not be treated as a money transmitter solely on that basis. Which, if that is truly written into law, then all of a sudden you have this huge boon that's going to kind of come into the DeFi space, which we've been waiting for that to happen, but there's been kind of this war on crypto for quite some time. So I'm excited to see that really happen. I hope it happens, but I guess time will tell if that really does happen at this point or not.
Yeah, I mean, time will tell is probably the way to go when it comes to all this government stuff. I mean, we still haven't seen any of the reports from the Commerce or the Treasury Secretary on how to purchase Bitcoin without levying taxpayer money. And we haven't seen how much Bitcoin the different departments in the government hold. And I think we just have to wait a lot longer than anybody wants to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, shoot, You could almost joke that hell's starting to freeze over because California is on the verge of allowing Bitcoin and other crypto to be used to pay for certain regulatory fees, which I didn't really see them as being one of the leaders in this space. And not that they're the leader, because there's been four or five other states that have done this, and they're still converting that crypto over to US dollars. So it's not really a holding crypto perspective. They're planning to kind of use this as a five-year test bed to see if it's going to make sense or not. And I kind of laugh. I'm like, in 5 years, they're going to be way behind at that point. They're going to become one of the smaller states if they really wait the whole 5 years to do something about it.
Right. And California also made Twitter news, and as far as Bitcoin goes, because they passed, or they included Bitcoin with everything else, like bank accounts, checking accounts, and things like that. So your account sits idle for over 3 years and they can't reach you, then it can be considered like a lot unclaimed assets, and they can transfer it into the state of California under the an older law. But they basically just added Bitcoin to be the same as everything else. Of course, it was like, no, your keys, not your coins. California is trying to capture your Bitcoin, you know, all these different things. But it really just added Bitcoin to the list of things that can be captured by the California government under unclaimed assets law. So it's one of those things. It's not like they created a whole new law just for Bitcoin. So it depends on how you look at it. Either Bitcoin's a little bit more legitimized because it's just like everything else, or California's trying to get your Bitcoin. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's becoming much more mainstream. You're seeing this. I mean, institutions and companies, we'll talk about companies here in a second, but everybody wants it, right? So it is one of the few things that's completely decentralized and no one has complete control on it. So they can't just shut you down because you're doing the wrong thing, according to them. So yeah, it's definitely exciting.
Yeah.
So I saw Hester Pierce was at PubKey the other day, one of your old stomping grounds, right? She stated Americans should be allowed to use crypto mixers, which was interesting. And she also mentioned that we should treat code as free speech. So, I mean, as usual, I think she is one of the best voices in government for crypto, and would love to see more things have her involvement in it. But yeah, that was kind of cool to see too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the more she talks, the better. That's totally fine with me. And like PubKey seems to be a lot more active. Like they're doing a lot more. I see their name pop up a lot more often than I have, you know, as far as having people come by and recording things and stuff like that. So that's pretty neat.
So the other really big news here last week was that Circle, which is the company that does the USDC stablecoin, decided to go public. They launched on Thursday, I think at like $31 a share. It closed above $83 a share, so 163% up in a single day, which is insane. Everybody was saying, well, they made $1.1 billion, but they left $1.7 billion on the table, which is, it's still fine. I think the next day they climbed to like $119 a share, so they're up 284% in like 2 days, which is crazy. What has kind of come out of that is now you're going to see probably companies like Kraken, Gemini, Ripple, they're all probably going to go public in the next year or two. The day after Circle went public, Gemini filed a confidential S-1 to go public as well. So it's happening. That's this mainstream of having more crypto companies, I think, is about to happen. You even have like Apple, Airbnb, Google, X. They're all looking to integrate stablecoins because the stablecoin theme right now has been taking off. If you look at stablecoins, last year they had over $27 trillion in transactions, which was more than Visa and MasterCard combined. And we talked about it last week where Steak and Shake said, when you're using things like the Bitcoin network, the fees are going way down compared to when they're using credit card fees. All these guys are interested in incorporating stablecoins to reduce the amount of fees they're paying to the Visa and MasterCards of the world.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, Circle is going public, basically a buyer of U.S. treasuries when nobody else seems to want to buy U.S. treasuries, just went public. And Circle seems to be, I mean, since the beginning, it had the feeling that they saw that Tether wasn't allowed in the United States, and that, so that there was a bit of a market gap that they could fill. So they seem to always just try to play by the rules and so that they can be a stable coin in the United States. And I think this is kind of the payoff on doing all that work. So that's good for them. I didn't buy any. I don't think I will, but there's definitely, I mean, we've talked about it, you know, between Bitcoin and state and stable coins, you know, the use cases are super obvious and I think they're easy to explain. Cynthia Lummis actually talked about it at the Bitcoin conference and said that they wanted to start with the stablecoin bill because it seemed to be the easiest to explain, like stablecoins to people, because it's kind of like digital dollars and, you know, everybody's kind of moved those around and everything else. She said it's been so much more difficult than she ever imagined. So, you know, everything's got a long hill to climb, but yeah, I mean, every step of the way helps. And if these Congress people buy Circle stock, then that certainly helps the likelihood of some legislation being passed.
Yeah, I also saw ProShares and Bitwise have already targeted ETFs focused right just on Circle. So I think ProShares wants to do a 2x ETF and Bitwise wants to do one of the covered call strategies on Circle. So I'll be kind of intrigued to see how that goes. I mean, a reason you would want to do that if it's going to be volatile. So I would have thought stablecoins would have been not volatile compared to the rest of the crypto market, but I mean, I guess who knows?
No, I agree. I don't know where the volatility would come in on the valuation side. I mean, that seems like as the stablecoin gets more popular, they use the funds to buy U.S. Treasuries or Bitcoin, and it seems pretty cut and dry and kind of easy to figure out what the financials are. So volatilities, I wouldn't expect them to be super volatile. I would expect them to go up. I mean, it's not like the value is going to be steady because adoption means growth. But I don't know. I don't know why their implied volatility would be enough to run a covered call strategy and generate income.
I think with the success of Misty, everybody wants to do that and try to get money into their ETF, I guess.
Yeah, that's MSTY is huge. I mean, $3 to $4 billion in an income covered call strategy fund is pretty wild.
Yeah, so speaking of ETFs, Truth Social just filed a second key document with the SEC for another Bitcoin spot ETF. What's intriguing about this one is Truth Social is pretty much the company that is tied to Trump. So they're saying that the president of the United States is getting into a Bitcoin spot ETF, which you could argue is a conflict of interest, maybe. At the same time, it also shows that he sees the future. And if you listen to any of his sons talk lately, they understood real estate. And now they realize that real estate isn't where the long-term success is going to be. It's going to be Bitcoin. So yeah, it's intriguing to see that happen. And I don't think it's going to be stopped, but I think they have 280 days to get it approved or so from the SEC.
Yeah, it's funny to me because there seems to be a lot of people that quickly can get their brain wrapped around Bitcoin from the real estate investment side, which doesn't make a lot of sense because there's a lot of people from the gold side that don't port over into Bitcoin, right? Real estate's completely different. I mean, Bitcoin doesn't produce yield, and you know, it's such a different asset class than why you get into real estate investments. You know, and like you don't want to leverage into Bitcoin, but you almost have to leverage into real estate. You know, you got to run an LLC, and you got all these different expenses you need to track and everything. I mean, you're basically running a company when you invest in real estate, and then in Bitcoin, it's just the most simple thing. You just buy it, and then you wait. And so I'm not sure why the real estate investor brain kind of moves over to Bitcoin, other than, you know, you don't really start to understand Bitcoin until you need to. And right now, it being a real estate investor is kind of tight because property taxes, insurance, repair costs have skyrocketed and you can't raise rents fast enough. So maybe that's why the last year or so has been really obvious to real estate investors to get into Bitcoin, because I'm seeing it a lot on like the MSTY and the MSTR selling calls on MSTR. It's what I'm doing. I sold a couple duplexes to do this trade, and I'm way ahead of where I'd be if I just had the duplexes. Not to mention, I had some huge expenses coming up in roofs and things like that. So, the real estate move into Bitcoin is interesting. I think that's happening faster than I thought. I mean, 4 years ago, you know, we would talk about all the different asset classes and the monetary premium that's put into those asset classes between real estate and stocks and bonds and jewelry, art, all this stuff. And I was always like, people aren't really going to get out of real estate. You know, they're not going to really view Bitcoin versus real estate. That seems like a huge stretch. You talk about stocks, your equities versus Bitcoin to me is a short walk. You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm just investing this money in a company, and now I'm going to invest it in, you know, Bitcoin or uranium or whatever. And that seems easy. And I think we see that in the ETFs, but real estate seemed like a further one. But it seems like the real estate brain, I guess maybe, you know, maybe they changed their unit of account to like, okay, well, I can go on this vacation, but that's, you know, that's half of the down payment on a new property. So maybe, you know, maybe their unit of account in their head is in deals that they could make. And so they can kind of shift their unit account easier into Bitcoin. Or they're just sick and tired of it. And so they're looking for somewhere to put their money where stock guys aren't sick and tired of stocks. I mean, you don't really have to do much. So I don't know. It's a weird one, but real estate, I'm definitely seeing a lot of like retail real estate investors move from real estate to Bitcoin.
Well, you got guys like Grant Cardone who were huge real estate guys in the past. And now every real estate thing that they're doing moving forward involves Bitcoin one way or the other. So it's kind of a mix that he's doing it, but I think he loves real estate, doesn't want to get away from it. But he also realizes that Bitcoin is kind of the future. And what I think I had listened to him talk before, what he was pretty much saying is a lot of people that knew nothing about Bitcoin were jumping in with this real estate plus Bitcoin, I guess, funds that he was doing. Even though they didn't know much about the Bitcoin piece, they understood that how it could be beneficial for the overall fund. So he was bringing in kind of the older generation that was scared of Bitcoin, but since it's paired with real estate now, they're all in.
Yeah, and to me, there's like somebody sometimes needs to hold your hand to get into Bitcoin. And these guys that are in, you know, I looked at his fund a little bit, you know, he's raising whatever. I think he wants to do, just say 1,000 apartment units. And so he's raising capital so that he can get a loan. And basically he's going to overfund the account so that he buys Bitcoin, he gets the down payment so that you kind of have this real estate investment fund that's got Bitcoin underlying. So I don't know what percentage it was, maybe 10% of the deal, excuse me, it was in Bitcoin. And I mean, I think it's pretty smart because you're going to have, you know, instead of a cap rate of say 8%, it's going to be a cap rate of 4%, but you hold a bunch of Bitcoin. So as Bitcoin appreciates, you get the upside. And if Bitcoin drops, then you're still cash flowing. So it's not a big deal. I think it's pretty smart, and it's a way to get people involved that in a way that's like, well, I invest in 6 or 7 different real estate funds, and one of them's got Bitcoin underneath it, and it's not super weird. Like, yeah, I bought $8 million worth of Bitcoin, and I had to learn all of the crap that goes along with it because I didn't want to leave it on exchange. So now I had to learn about self-custody and private keys and everything else. So I think it's smart. I think you'll see more of that stuff. And yeah, the Cardone guys are all over Twitter talking about Bitcoin these days.
Yeah. Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes, or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast. So speaking of buying Bitcoin, let's talk about strategy. 9 consecutive weeks of buying Bitcoin. They bought another 110 million, which I guess seems low compared to some of the other buys, just over 1,000 Bitcoin. They now hold over 582,000 Bitcoin. And then on top of that, Stride, one of their third product they're releasing, is selling, I think today. They originally were planning for 250 million of an offering, and they 4x that to $1 billion. So there's theoretically another $1 billion that's about to become available here shortly for them to buy more Bitcoin.
Yeah. And this is, and like you said, it's not the biggest purchase, just over 1,000 Bitcoin, but that for 2 weeks in a row, they did not use the common stock ATM to generate those funds. So, you know, they're not impacting stock price in order to raise funds. I think what they'll end up doing is hitting the common share ATM to just pay the dividends for Stride, Strife, and Strike. And so they're like, basically they're levered up to buy Bitcoin. And it's really smart, man. These Stride, Strife, and Strike dividend payments, they're not 10 and 8%. They're $10 and $8 per share. So right now, you know, something like 5 or 6% is pretty good interest rate to get. So the share price is designed to be around $100 to get your, you know, to get 8% on an $8 per share dividend. But what they're going to end up doing is the stock prices are going to be $120, $130, $140 to kind of reach equilibrium with a little bit of a risk premium on those. So they're going to end up generating a lot of cash. And then if they do lower interest rates, then that means the stock prices go up for those preferred perpetual funds. And they've got more money to play with and more money to buy Bitcoin when the interest rates go down. So it's really smart, man. What they're doing is unheard of, and it's working pretty well. I did see David Bailey, who is the Bitcoin Magazine guy. He puts on the Bitcoin conference. I don't know that he's particularly brilliant, but he's in at the head of Nakamoto, which is another Bitcoin treasury company that's going to get off the ground. And he said they're going to bring these perpetual preferred stocks to all the companies that they can purchase that are public, that are, they turn into Bitcoin treasury companies. So they're tapping into a huge bond fixed income market. Then once you get a little, a couple of years of confidence under those guys' belt, then money can really flow in.
So I saw Metaplanet made some announcements too. They just changed their goal. The original goal was 21,000 Bitcoin by the end of 2026. They just moved that to 210,000 Bitcoin by the end of 27, which gives them 101% of the entire supply. I mean, that's 10xing in with less than a year to go. I'm not sure entirely how they're going to grow a lot of this, or I guess acquire a lot of this money to be able to do that, but that's a crap ton of money. That's a crap ton of Bitcoin for a company that was tiny not too long ago.
Well, I mean, there for a week or so when they released the stock into the U.S. market, the stock would jump in the U.S. market, then it would go to Japan when they'd open, and it would be limit up. They would stop the market on it because it would go up too much for Japan's rules. And then, so there's a ton of demand for this. So they're selling shares into that demand, and it doesn't seem to be breaking it. Their new plan is a 555 plan where they're going to issue 555 million new shares. They expect to raise $5.4 billion, and all of that goes into Bitcoin. So Metaplanet's gone from, like, I think they owned one hotel, and now they're talking about double-digit billions of dollars and, you know, raising $5 billion in a single action. So Bitcoin, and, you know, you're using the old fiat rules and these fiat games in order to buy Bitcoin. And if it does what, you know, we expect Bitcoin to do, especially if this $100,000 Bitcoin price is as stable of a floor as it's kind of becoming, you know, years from now, this is going to be huge. And while we're talking about this, Michael Saylor was on the Jordan Peterson podcast, and he actually had a really good interview where he talked about, it's basically his origin story, and he tapped into Bitcoin a little bit before they moved to, like, the premium side. So it's like an hour and a half or so, and then I think another hour if you are behind a paywall. But it was a good, you know, sometimes he sounds crazy. It actually talked about why he kind of does the allegories and metaphors that he does, which was actually pretty neat to hear, because sometimes Saylor sounds crazy.
I'll have to go try to listen to that one. That'd be interesting.
It's a good listen for sure.
So speaking of other companies, No Labs just announced they're going to start a Bitcoin treasury with about 1,000 Bitcoin. Qler, KULR, which is an energy management firm. They are planning to raise $300 million to buy more Bitcoin. They hold 800 Bitcoin today. They're a company based in California, which is always interesting to see California-based companies do some more stuff. What's also intriguing, they just leased 5,500 S19 Bitcoin miners for about $4 million. So far, they've earned about 10 Bitcoin doing that. But I mean, I think they're just getting started. But energy management firm getting into Bitcoin mining, kind of funny.
Yeah, and I mean, on my Twitter feed, it seems like every day I'm reading about some new small company that's putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And sometimes it's 10 Bitcoin, sometimes it's 50, sometimes it's 500, 1,000. And we're still, price is still like in the low 100,000. So I think, you know, we've seen a little bit of a volatility squeeze in the Bitcoin price. And normally when there's a squeeze like this, things break either up or down kind of violently. So maybe we'll see a big jump in Bitcoin price pretty soon. I mean, we are kind of coming close to the fall of the year past the halving, and you look at the Bitcoin cycles and all of that, like the magic of the Bitcoin cycles. We could see kind of the hyperbolic price increase, and then I think this corporate treasury stuff and all this borrowing is how I could see how things, a bubble bursts and this thing drops back down, so we could make a run up and then come back down. It's like, it doesn't make sense as to why that keeps happening. It happens in different ways every time, but it seems like every halving cycle, it's a new business cycle components turn to get into Bitcoin and go in over their head, and then kind of everything collapsed. So I feel like I could see how that's going to happen this time.
It's weird because, I mean, you're hearing so many companies starting to acquire Bitcoin, and it's still just scratching the surface. K-Wave Media, which is a Korean company listed on the NASDAQ, they just announced they want to be the Korean Metaplanet. They're planning to sell $500 million in stock. Their stock jumped 165% in a day when they announced that, but it's still under $5. So you got the Norwegian Block Exchange, which is the first publicly listed company in Norway to hold Bitcoin as part of its treasury strategy. They just announced Bluebird Mining Company, which is a London-listed gold exploration company with operations across Asia. They just unveiled plans to adopt Bitcoin as part of its treasury strategy. They're also looking for a new CEO to lead them in this. And their shares jumped like 60% too, but it's still under like 40 cents a share. So, I mean, a lot of these companies are going from very small to trying to become something with the whole Bitcoin treasury strategy, I guess. And we're going to kind of see where that goes.
Yeah. I mean, you sound like my X feed where it just rattles off these different companies that are jumping in, and you know, it's great. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of how retail works. Like one person in a group gets in, and then a couple of years later, the people that know them jump in too. So, I mean, it's funny to watch it happen.
Yeah, I think the last one I saw was the Blockchain Group, which is Europe's first Bitcoin treasury company. They just had, they're just issuing a share issuance program worth $342 million that they're going to use to buy Bitcoin, right? So it's, we haven't seen as much out of Europe lately with everything going on there. It seems like they've died down, but I mean, now you're starting to hear a lot more companies that are getting into Bitcoin and not trusting everything else that's happening over there.
If I was in Europe, I think I would be looking for ways to preserve my wealth too.
Well, it's interesting. There was a tweet by Max Kaiser, or maybe they both retweeted or something, pretty much talking about that the Turkish lira has crashed against Bitcoin. It's down like over 98% in the past 5 years. So it has this picture of the lira equals 0.00 Bitcoin, which, I mean, I see that. I mean, if you look at today, a US dollar equals about 39 lira. A Bitcoin equals about 4.24 million lira. So if you're looking at comparing lira to sats, it's only about 24 sats or so per Turkish lira. So you have to go a lot of zeros over and start seeing something. And most of the time, those places aren't expanding the Bitcoin price to show the six other zeros that are there. So yeah, it hasn't really crashed. I mean, it has definitely gone down, but you can still buy Bitcoin with the Turkish lira.
Yeah, I'm watching this stuff, especially when Bitcoin gets kind of close to all-time highs in the US dollar. That normally means it's in all-time highs against the other currencies because they debase a little faster. And man, I mean, if you're in Turkey and you were a Bitcoiner in 2017, you got to feel pretty smart. Like,
yeah.
I mean, even if you put in the what we talked about, 1 to 2% of your net worth and blah, 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 like you saved yourself.
Yeah, it went up 100% or 100x, right, compared to the Turkish lira. Right?
Yeah, it's
crazy.
You basically broke even on your purchasing power in a country where everything's falling apart.
Yeah. So speaking of falling apart, Argentina had some issues in the past. There was their new president is kind of getting some slack over the whole Libra promo that he did on his personal Lex account. They have just officially cleared him of that he did nothing wrong, which I think is a good thing. He's trying to turn Argentina around and was kind of pushing that maybe crypto is the way. And I don't think he said you should go buy this, but he did say here's something that could help. And then it turned around and tanked, but it wasn't Bitcoin. So shocker. Why is everybody surprised?
I know. I do like that a lot of these big companies are just like straight to Bitcoin. Not messing around with like an Ethereum treasury company and not messing around with a Solana treasury company. It's like, it's Bitcoin and move on. And then you got stuff like that where, you know, that's a decision that was made to just to be like, we're instead of Bitcoin, we're going to do this. We're going to do something else. If you're going to stick your neck out and do a cryptocurrency move, it has to be Bitcoin. So and all these corporations in if the United States does get into strategic reserve, then your neck isn't stuck out as much, right? Because you're like, man, I'm just doing what the United States is doing. So I think we'll see more and more of countries getting into Bitcoin. It's kind of been quiet on that side, you know, since Bhutan and some of these other countries have kind of come out, but we'll see more. I think that's just the natural progression of things.
Well, there's definitely still a few companies that are looking at Ethereum and Solana treasury companies, like Sol Strategies is really big into Solana. And I think what they're doing makes sense. It's kind of, if Solana is your niche, that's fine. Do what you got to do, be different. But I do think long-term, I don't know if it competes with Bitcoin long-term or not. So time will tell.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just read that there's a Texas congressman named Brandon Gill, who, you know, they have to release when they make financial moves. And he purchased in 4 purchases between $350,000 and $850,000 in Bitcoin. And I just don't see that in Solana or Ethereum. And no. So, you know, the more Congress people have Bitcoin on their balance sheet, on their personal portfolio, the better, because guess what they're going to vote for? Other people.
Yep. Well, Ethereum has had a couple of good weeks. They've had 15 straight days of inflows in the Ethereum ETFs. I think about $815 million in the last 20 days. So, I mean, I know we're talking about much bigger numbers with the Bitcoin stuff, but since the launch of the Ethereum ETFs, they've had about $3.3 billion come in. And it seems to be that there are a handful of institutions that are really opening up on the idea of having this value prop of a decentralized computer, which is kind of what Ethereum is enabling people to do. So it's still, it's not a Bitcoin, and it is much different and can enable quite a few other applications as well. So I don't want to say it's competing with Bitcoin because it's doing a completely different job. And if you look at what's happening with stablecoins, most of those are on the Ethereum network at this point, not on the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, I mean, Ethereum's made a pretty good rebound from their bottom. I mean, their market cap is almost double from what it was in early April when they kind of bottomed out. And I haven't been paying much attention, but yeah, I mean, it seems like they're, Ethereum's not going to die, but it is kind of, when you look at price, which is a good measure, and you know they're still at $2,700 a Ethereum, so it's kind of struggling against Bitcoin, but everything struggles against Bitcoin, so that makes sense.
Yep. I know we've talked a lot in the past about free speech, and X had done kind of a good job with trying to keep free speech free. They just made an announcement that they're going to partner with Polymarket, and integrate them as the preferred prediction market, which, I mean, if you saw during the elections, Polymarket was more accurate than pretty much all the specialists and experts out there. So what's kind of interesting is this is probably the first crypto-related integration since the NFT profile pictures that Twitter had, and I think Twitter actually removed that back in 2023 when Elon Musk took over. So it's exciting to see some more integration with the blockchain space and, I mean, with the stablecoin space and Musk's goal for having a single app that you can transmit money and buy all that kind of stuff with, then I think there's probably a lot more coming in the future.
Yeah, and I'm glad we started talking about Elon Musk because Elon and Trump got into a little bit of a spat and were blasting each other on Twitter. And I think the way I saw it and the way it came across my radar was it all started because Elon's like, this big, beautiful bill is just more of the problem. And, you know, it's not sustainable. It's more debt. It's, you know, deficit and blah, 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 blah. And then they just went back and forth. And then Elon says, Trump's on the Epstein list. And everybody went nuts. And so for like a day or two, I like impacted markets and price and things like that. It was like watching a middle school breakup on social media. It was weird.
Well, the price has definitely come back with a vengeance, I feel like. I mean, we're borderline about to break all new time highs. But yeah, I mean, what is going on there is kind of ridiculous. I think what I take out of it that's interesting is Trump doesn't really care about the debt. I think he put a tweet out here recently that the one thing he agrees with Elizabeth Warren on is that there should be no cap on the federal deficit. So we're at, what, $34 trillion, and we should have no cap forever. Which all that means is they're about to print some money like it's going out of style, and that will enable Trump to be able to do everything else that he's promised on the campaign trail, which means that once that happens, the only direction that Bitcoin is going to go is up. So more reason to buy more things like Bitcoin at this point.
And that's my read on the situation as well. It is crazy to, you know, for him to get elected with Doge and cleaning up the government and getting rid of waste and fraud and abuse and all these things. And man, that lasted a couple of months. And now it's like, nope, business as usual. We're going to pass a bill that is a huge spending package. We need to raise the debt limit and all this other stuff. It's like, man, it didn't take long for him to just fall in line.
Yeah. I mean, the sad part is I don't think it's just like a Trump thing. It's the rest of the United States was anti-Doge. Like for some reason, a majority, it seems like, or maybe just a very vocal group went after Doge and said what they're doing is wrong. And they don't want to actually get rid of all the corruption and fraud and waste, which it's fine. Just know that by doing that, the US dollar long-term will struggle against Bitcoin. And so if you're saying that, you should be buying Bitcoin and not putting all your eggs into the US dollar basket.
Yeah, and it's funny because the team that was anti-Doge is supposed to be the team that's like looking out for the little guy and the lower middle and lower classes, but this is crushing them. And so it doesn't make sense like everything else. So I don't know. I don't know why things have gone the way it is. I don't see how you go against the guy that's trying to clean up some of these departments and is exposing like, hey, some of the stuff was like no-brainers. Like, yeah, okay, there's 500,000 seats for this software and there's only 200,000 employees that use it. Stop paying for it. And like, no, we can't do that. Like, I don't understand how you take the other side of that position. So yeah, I mean, I'm like, I give up. If Elon Musk gives up, I give up. Like, guess what? I got to look after my portfolio and I got to look after my family. And what's, you know, if they're going to inflate the dollar, then I need to buy hard assets. And it's very clear that, I mean, if the next guy or the next person that is elected isn't going to try this hard, right? Mm-hmm. Like
Not at all.
Like Elon Musk put himself and his companies in a pretty big risk situation, and nobody's going to do that. So we had one crack, and it only lasted a few months, and it's over.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. So it's almost disappointing at the same time with what happened. So speaking of disappointing, World Economic Forum is not usually something I ever want to talk about because I think they're worthless. But they did release an article that was kind of intriguing. Their expectation on DPIN, which is decentralized physical infrastructure, they think that's going to grow from somewhere in the 30 to 50 billion range right now to $3.5 trillion by 2028. That's a pretty large growth. And specifically, they talked about DeepAI, which is decentralized physical AI, will be the one that leads the way. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where that goes. I mean, we've talked about in the beginning of this year, I think I mentioned some of the AI agents, and that would be an intriguing theme to see what happens. That seems to be one of the things that's going to be leading the way in this space. I still don't know enough about it to really understand it as well as I would like, but I do think the DPIN space is where we'll see a lot more moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big number. And for the World Economic Forum to say anything that is positive about anything in the crypto space is kind of an interesting newsworthy piece.
Well, it's maybe because they got rid of the, what's his face?
Schwab.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think he's stepping down, so we'll see.
Another cool use case in the crypto space is coming out of a company named Cudis, C-U-D-I-S. They just launched a token that rewards users with crypto for building consistent, healthy habits. They have two generations of a ring, kind of similar to the Aura ring that tracks your fitness and sleep, but their app also works for other solutions out there. I think Apple, Garmin, and Aura, they use like an AI coach and an AI agent to help people along. Kind of intriguing. You can go, I think right now you can go mint an NFT that would enable you to have one of the next generation rings. And then you could earn some of these tokens that they're giving out, which I think they're like a dime a piece right now. But the whole goal behind all of this is it's collecting your data. And then it's going to list, have this marketplace to where you can sell your data to others and actually monetize it. So in the past with all these other companies, and when you sign up for it, they just take your data and do whatever they want with it for the most part. Now you're actually going to be able to monetize your data one way or the other. And this is kind of a win-win for both companies. So I'm for both sides of the equation. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where this goes. It's still pretty new. I'm tempted to kind of buy or download the app and connect it to my Garmin and see where things go, but hoping that this becomes more commonplace where we're all in control of our data and then we can monetize it to whoever we want.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, I mean, as I like the government being fiscally responsible, I've given up on like protecting my data, but there's going to be a ton of people that are like, there's no way I'm not going to sell my data. And I'm like, well, currently you're giving it away. So your choice is you get to sell it or you get to give it away. Your call. And at least this way you get, to, I mean, you know, you get to a little bit of a piece of the pie, since I mean it's your skin in the game, and right now you don't get anything. So I'd like to watch that. That'd be a cool thing.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I had, something somewhat positive to end on. We've been talking about so much positive news, and I guess the question probably on the back of everybody's mind is, if there's all this good stuff happening and all these companies and countries and everybody else is buying Bitcoin, who's selling it, right? And it's like, who's the idiots out there that are selling Bitcoin right now with all the positive news? And Willy Woo kind of did a thing to try to uncover who's selling it. And a lot of what he found out is it's the whales right now that are selling it. The guys that have 10,000 plus Bitcoin, they bought it for way less than $700 of Bitcoin. They've held it for somewhere between 8 and almost 16 years. And for a lot of these guys, you're seeing 1,000x returns. So for taking the risk and doing this for this long, it's probably good to take some profit and go enjoy it, right? So it doesn't make me think that they're an idiot anymore. If you got that much Bitcoin, yeah, I guess it's not a bad idea to sell it and use it to enjoy life for now.
Yeah, and I can kind of feel that with some of the people I know that have been in Bitcoin a long time, and myself. It's like, all right, like we won, right? You know what I mean? Like it feels like this thing's not going to zero. The government's, you know, it's like all the pressure has come off of holding Bitcoin and being this weirdo that's doing it, because we have all these stories of all these people doing it. And so I do think that there's kind of a relaxation in, you know, the grip that people have on their Bitcoin, and they want to enjoy life a little bit. And so yeah, it definitely makes sense to me.
So what else did I miss?
You know, the only thing that I had in my notes is, I drive when I'm doing stuff, I'll drive around and listen to Bitcoin podcasts and stuff. And I was listening to a MicroStrategy podcast, and they actually said something interesting that I was like, yeah, this does make sense. And I kind of applied it to Bitcoin, because they're like, between Stride, Strife, and Strike coming out on MicroStrategy and doing covered call strategies, it's like, you could spend a lot of time in your investment research time that you allot to just dedicating to MicroStrategy, and it would be enough. You can generate income, you've got growth, you've got fixed income, you've got, you know, plenty of meat on the bone to learn about. And but in order to do that, you have to forget everything that you're taught, which is diversify your portfolio and get into index funds and reduce fees and da 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 da. And it's like, man, maybe that's another thing that makes it tough to get into Bitcoin is you have to go against the grain on everything you're taught about investing growing up, which is pay off your debt. You don't want to, you know, get out of debt as soon as you can, diversify your investments, all this stuff. And it's like, man, the dollar's falling apart. Leverage in dollars, buy fixed assets like Bitcoin, and pay off the debt with future worthless dollars, and watch your assets appreciate. And so, I mean, it is really tough to kind of make that leap into these kind of newer assets. But the more people do it, the more it feels normal. And the more it feels normal, the more people do it. So I think, you know, that's going to be kind of the run. But it's funny, man. It's like you listen to stuff and you have these epiphany type moments of like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like, it is hard. And I mean, you and I are something like 7 years deep into this thing. And it's still, I mean, I struggle to be like, well, I just need to buy more Bitcoin. I'm like, God dang, how much is enough? You know, it's like at a certain point you're really lopsided, and I don't know. It's a weird thing, but out of the sooner you get off zero, the sooner you start to learn all this stuff.
Yeah. To me, it's one of those things where if you kind of go back and read a lot of the biographies of some of the famous people and what they've done, most of them didn't diversify into a bunch of things. They focused on one thing and went after that, and that's how they became successful. So there's very few people that can touch a lot of different things and be good enough in all of them to be successful in all of them, where it's almost you have to go find something that you think is really going to work and kind of go all in, and that's where the majority of your gains are going to come from. And then you can diversify from there to hopefully reduce the chance of the money going down. But usually to make those big gains at first, it's not the index funds. I mean, okay, great, go get 12% a year, that's fine, but the most successful people, that's not what they're doing. They're looking for the 100x gains and things like that. So
yeah, I think the saying is you put all your eggs in one basket and then really pay attention to that basket. It's like that's pretty much what you got to do to kind of break out of this US dollar problem that we're in.
Yeah. Awesome. Another really exciting week. A lot of good things happening, a lot of crazy things happening at the same time. So I'm looking forward to the next weeks and months, as hopefully we'll start to see maybe some of this SEC guidance turn into actual laws and just make it to where this is really going to be the crypto capital of the planet for Trump being in the US. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I would like to see some announcements. I mean, we're coming up. I mean, it's kind of the middle of June. August is the recession, or not the recession, but the August break for Congress. I mean, normally June, July, they start to kind of come out with stuff. So it's about time to hear some things. I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yep. Awesome. We'll chat next week. Thanks, Al.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet,
and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.